This podcast is brought to you by Cross Catholic Outreach. Last year, Cross Catholic Outreach provided over 30 million meals to families in need around the world. Join us in our global effort to reduce material and spiritual poverty. Learn more at crosscatholic.org/bless.
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code REDBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Today, I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this the concept of Man Show.
Warning. The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We are on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here sitting with David Niles. We are sans Juan this evening. But his future brother-in-law is becoming Catholic this weekend.
Yeah.
So
we allowed it.
We gave him the night off.
We totally forgot about it, but we allowed it.
That's why we're a little late this evening.
We called him and like, Juan,
where are you?
He's like, I'm in Shreveport, bro. I was like, what the heck are you doing in Shreveport?
we got an episode to record. And then we realized,
and he's
yes.
Remember I told you? And I was like, yeah, I was just kidding about that.
We were just joking. Yeah. Hey, I want to give a shout out. Can I give a shout out? I haven't given a shout out in a while.
I will allow it.
I want to give a shout
and
out.
And I encourage it.
I want to give a shout out to Deacon Gary Beam.
To the Beamster.
To Deacon Gary Beam. He's a deacon at the Church of St. Benedict, and he gave a rockin' homily.
Yeah, he did give a good homily today.
And you know what? He was fearless in his homily because he talked definitely about some controversial things.
Right.
And there's obviously going to be people that were stirred up about it. But I know that there are priests that listen to this show. I know that there are deacons that listen to this show, seminarians. Yeah.
So he broached the subject of politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't like go full force into it, but he obviously was referring to politics.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, this is just my beef about political discussions. It's not actually about the discussion, but it's about people's reaction to political discussions. Because some people will say like, oh, you shouldn't talk about, you know, politics and blah, 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 blah. And I think that they do that because they've adopted an attitude that is sort of like a moral relativism politically. You know, that, you know, don't do that because that's just your opinion and everybody else has a different opinion and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But the truth is, there is one person is right.
Mm-hmm.
That some political opinions are right and some are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if it was just about like, oh, what color is the best color? Obviously, there is no best color. You know, okay, then that would be.
Even though it's orange.
I mean, yeah. See, so there you go. There's, you know, one example of what could be the best color, but that would be a fruitless discussion. You're just really wasting your time. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than just the exercise of debate.
Right.
But with political conversations, there is a right and there is a wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and sometimes you're talking about degrees of wrongness between both options. You know, it's not
most of the time.
Yeah.
These days.
I mean, as South Park said once, you have to choose between a turd sandwich and another bad option.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, but why I said that is because it takes virtue to stand up, takes fortitude, takes, you know, courage to get up there and say stuff that you know you're going to get backlash for.
I appreciated what he did.
Yeah. So, you know, even though...
Because one of the candidates has called... actually, one of the vice presidential candidates, who also happens to be a woman, has called the Knights of Columbus a racist organization.
Right.
And so it's like, well, as a Catholic, that is a little bit offensive. I'm not actually offended personally, but that doesn't mean that was not an offensive thing to say.
Right.
Because, the thing is, I don't ever get offended by anybody just because, if you're saying something to me to offend me, you're clearly a moron. And I don't really care what morons have to say.
That is
my actual outlook on, I mean, it's like, and I'll pray for you. You know, I don't say that or feel that way to be mean to anybody, but it's like, why am I going to let the opinion or words of an idiot or somebody who's just like maybe is on the internet somewhere, why am I going to let that affect me?
How I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just am glad. I mean, obviously you don't want to be a provocateur for the sake of being provocative.
Right.
But, there is an importance of being able to speak the truth, knowing that you're going to get backlash but knowing that you have to say it because it's your duty to say it. And God has ordained it to so.
See.
So anyway, I just want to give him a shout out because that doesn't get brought up enough.
See, senor.
So this is if this is your first time listening to the show, the first thing we do is
welcome to you, sir.
I assume because of the title of the show, there's going to be new listeners. So if this is your first time, the first thing we do is we open review and enjoy a beverage.
A manly beverage.
Then we highlight a gear, and then we get into the topic.
We're not drinking sarsaparilla around here.
No. Although those are delicious.
Are they? I have no idea. I said that, and I was like, I wonder what that is. Might be good.
I think it's like black cherry vanilla soda. Isn't it? Isn't that right?
Is that what it is?
Don't look at me. Oh, Jim didn't know. Okay.
I'm not that old.
So tonight we're
is that an old drink? He said I'm not that old.
Yeah,
it's an old drink.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sarsaparilla, say.
So tonight we're drinking Kilkelman. It's a vintage 2010. It's a limited edition. And Kilkelman is a distillery that I really enjoy because it does have
9 years. 9 years.
9 years. Yeah. So what this whiskey is it's 42 barrels of bourbon barrels that is first fill with three sherry butts, and then they put them all together. And
three sherry butts on the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get three sherry butts in one barrel?
No, three different sherry butts.
Okay.
A Oloroso sherry butts.
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that, but...
And they blend it all together.
I'll look it up later.
Let me give you the tasting notes, and then I'll let you... Or you want to give your tasting notes first? It smells good.
This tastes good. So good.
The thing about this is it's it's 50 ppm, so it is going to be peaty.
I can definitely smell the peat.
Lafroig runs around 40 to 45.
Oh, wow.
So, but because of the Oloroso and because of Kilkelman in general, they have a little bit more of a vanilla, a little bit more sweeter taste to it. So it's going to be a nice blend of whiskeys, I think.
Mm.
So the note says it's clean, coastal notes, jump out at first, sea spray, lemongrass.
That's what I was going to say, that you can really taste the ocean in that dram right there. Like, it's very seaweedy, very ocean water.
Mm-hmm. And then the palate, it says big, ashy peat smoke with smoked lemon, barbecued pineapple, and banana.
Mm.
Don't get that. I haven't tried it yet.
I'd have to search for that a little longer.
Toasted coconut and salted smoked almonds. And then the finish is more pipe tobacco, rolling peat smoke, and drying oak. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't get any of the fruitiness. But I also do not claim to be the definitive the definitive tongue. I really like it. I mean, it is really good. It is a lot like Laphroaig. It doesn't have, you know, if you were to just try it side by side, you could tell, oh, that's not Laphroaig. Laphroaig has a very distinct flavor that's just like, it's a Laphroaig flavor. This doesn't have that Laphroaigness.
I love the finish. It's very long.
I don't say that in a bad way. It's just, right. You know, you can tell it's not that, because it is tempting to compare it to Laphroaig, being that it is so peaty, you know, and it, right. It's,
boy, it's, that it's is that kind that of whiskey. That is a very nice dram though.
It is really nice. I do like the salty, like seaweed flavor that you get. Isn't that weird? Because I would never want to eat seaweed. You know, if you put like a bowl of seaweed in front of me.
I do get a little bit of the banana. I don't get the toasted coconut.
Are you going to eat any of the seaweed? I mean,
I've had seaweed before on like sushi. Really? Yeah, they
do okay. Sushi. Okay. Yeah. But I mean,
but that's that.
That's
is,
not what I'm talking about.
It's very
about.
Interesting though, because it doesn't have the. It mellows out on the palate in the middle, and then it picks back up the aggressiveness at the very end. It's a long finish. But the first the first part of it is a little aggressive, mellows out, and then comes back at you.
Yeah. I agree. It is definitely a long finish. You know what? I do get some banana at the very end, like now here at the very finish, like as it's sitting. Now I can kind of get some banana, but not on the like
really good.
Not in the front when they were.
It's very
it's
complex.
Not at the beginning.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah,
it's very complex. So
sort of like my taxes.
Really?
No, actually.
Mine are very easy.
Not hard. Yeah. Especially like over the last 4 years, they've been a lot easier.
Right.
Who itemizes now? Yeah. I mean, right?
I wish I didn't.
I wish I was itemizing. That means I'm obviously giving a lot of money to charity.
Which I would love to do.
I don't have enough money to give that much to charity.
Dave, let me ask you this. For the people who are new to the show.
Yeah.
Why are we drinking? That's a good question.
Yeah,
to ask.
So we drink on the show because, well, there's really a lot of reasons. One of them is to promote the notion of holy leisure. The other one is to promote moderation, temperance. God made the things of this earth good, and they should be enjoyed for their goodness. And so that's what we seek to do here on the Catholic Man Show, to enjoy life to its fullest and promote virtue at the same time.
You look up Catholic Answers Focus. We did a whole episode with Cy Kellett on this very topic. Just Google that and you can listen to that as well. So when we get back, we actually have a man gear today. Excited to give it to you. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan and Jim Spencer. We're sans Juan Posada. He's in Shreveport right now, having a great time without us.
It's super selfish.
I told him to put $1,000 on black for me. I bet he doesn't even do it. That's the thing about
him. He said he would.
He said he would. I'll bet he doesn't even do it.
Yeah.
You know, but thanks for listening to everybody. Everybody, thanks for listening today, and thanks for joining us on Facebook/YouTube. If it looks like I'm bleeding out of my eyes at the moment, don't worry, it's just chlorine.
Thought you've been playing video games for the last 27 hours.
Till my eyes bleed.
Yeah,
I tried that one time, not on purpose. Like I wasn't trying to make my eyes bleed, but I did play video games for probably that long.
Man. That is a long time.
College, you know. Yeah. Just do anything.
We're drinking a little Kilchoman's 2010 vintage.
It is so good.
It's about a $100 bottle.
It's $100. So this is going to drop you a Benjamin.
Yes, but there's not very... It was a limited release, so there's not very many
What's
of them
say?
Out there.
It says $97.99. So yeah.
It's a...
Plus tax.
It's a limited release. So if you can find it, I definitely think it would be one for the whiskey shelf.
You know, so there's some states where you don't pay tax on groceries. Does whiskey count as a grocery? Like, do you get out of...
I'm not sure. So we're going to jump into the man gear.
Okay.
Man gear is... The idea came from my brother-in-law, Holden Bell. He gave me this idea, and it actually does really well piggybacking off of our last episode when we talked about the home.
Yes.
And making sure to take care of your yard and things. And it's It's called T-Nex, T-Nex, N-E-X.
Okay.
And it's a chemical that you put on your yard that allows your grass, it keeps your grass from growing too fast as what it normally does, but it doesn't kill the grass.
Right.
It doesn't brown the grass. It doesn't hinder it in any way as far as disease or anything that. All it does is it stunts its growth, basically.
Yeah.
And so if you're a guy who has a big yard that doesn't like to mow, and you're looking for a way to slow your grass from growing so much,
yeah,
this would be a sweet man gear.
Even if you water it and you keep it really green, it still just won't grow.
It won't grow as fast.
Yeah. Because it will grow.
It will grow. Yes, but it gives it time also to. My understanding is it improves the color of the grass. Well, it greens it up as well.
Hmm.
So anyway, he knows everything about yards. Holden does, and so he was telling me about this, and I had no idea about it. So it comes in this big bottle. It is like a gallon jug, and the jug is expensive. It's like $150 or something like that. But you only use about 3/4 of an ounce on a average size yard. So it's going to last you a long time.
Yeah.
And basically,
this is just something that anybody can go and buy.
Yeah, you can go buy it on Amazon now. Wow. Yes.
Okay.
And if you, let's say you mow your yard every 5 days, it'll probably push it out to where you only have to mow your yard every 8 to 12 days.
Yeah. Okay.
Depending. So especially how you go on your month long vacation every year.
It's 2 months, but you know.
2 months. Yes.
I'm still on vacation. I'm bilocating right now. Right.
It would be good to put on your yard before you leave, so that way you don't come back to a jungle in your yard.
Yeah. Yeah, so I could see that. I'm going to be honest. I have a little bit of a hesitancy embracing this man gear because it seems to me to violate some just principles of nature, some of the natural law about messing with stuff that shouldn't be, there's just something in me that's little bit unsure about this, they're going to find out turns out it also turns you into a small person, or
golf courses use this a lot.
Do
as
they?
Well. Yes.
I believe that.
Yep.
But I just, the thing is, I don't know enough about it to embrace it personally. I like the idea, but also the other thing is that I don't like stuff that helps you avoid work just for the sake of avoiding work.
Well, but
you know what I mean?
I do understand.
Do you know what I mean?
I get that. But to me, it's okay, good. It gives me more time to get my flower beds in order or my vegetable garden or, just other things that I need to make sure I'm doing in the yard. So anyway, I really like it.
I do see what you're saying, especially for me, when I'm gone for the 6 months, that could be good so that, my yard.
I'm not going to have to mow it.
Right, exactly.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
So,
although
anyway, it's called T-Nex, N-E-X.
T-Nex.
Mm-hmm. So
it's not like a T-shirt.
No.
That's just the chemical.
Correct.
And it won't kill you.
It will not kill you.
Are you sure?
That's what Holden said. So if it does, talk
stuff
to
like this, I feel like is either going to do nothing or give you superpowers.
Holden's been putting it on his yard, and he says it's been working really well.
This is the kind of stuff that if you at the factory fall into a big vat, you come out with some superpowers or something. That's how it goes.
That'd be cool. Depending on the superpower.
I know. In the movies, it just works so well.
Right.
The whole falling into the nuclear waste.
Right.
Except for people the Penguin. Because isn't that what happened to him?
I don't know, dude. I don't remember, I'm not a Marvel guy.
But for a lot of people, anyway, it works great. Or and
DC, whatever it is. I don't even know. Anyway.
Yeah. Batman is DC.
Okay. So, anyway, I wanted to touch on that because I thought it was good piggyback off of last week.
It's something to look into, for sure.
Definitely something to look into.
Because there really is nothing better. If you go on a walk through your neighborhood and you come across that yard that just looks amazing,
pristine condition.
Yeah, there's just something so beautiful about a well-maintained yard.
No doubt.
And I'm going to say this. I think that if you have a healthy yard There's nothing wrong with walking on it, okay? Don't be that guy.
It's like, don't walk in my yard.
Get off my grass.
Right, exactly. It's like, why don't you go back inside, sir, okay? And do something productive with your life other than just stare outside your window waiting for someone to accidentally step on your grass. Like, a healthy yard should be... You should be able to walk on it. Otherwise, it's like, is it really that healthy if my footprints are going to, like, crush your yard? Or
I just like to bring something. Beauty. I like to try right. to bring beauty.
I know, but it's like the people who are anal about it, it's like, you need a life.
It's okay.
Please, sir, I'd like to invite you to have a life. This is a personal invitation.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Are you with me? I'm not sure that you are.
I don't know.
At this...
I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
You are the get off
depends,
my yard?
No, it depends on what it is.
We're not talking about walking through flower beds. We're talking about walking on grass.
I understand. I don't want to get into it, though. I'm not interested in getting into this.
Really?
This combo. Because it's going to take too long.
Well, you could just say one way or the other.
So, but I want to actually get into the topic.
Okay.
I want to jump into the topic early this evening because I think that it's going to take us a little while to get through it. And if you're listening on the radio, go and make sure you download the podcast because odds are we're not going to be able to get through all of this. Within the allotted time. So we'll add this to the podcast and you can get it on YouTube as well. So if you're listening on the radio right now, you can subscribe to the Catholic Man Show on all the platforms or whatever. But I came across this it's not an article, I guess it's essay, maybe more of an essay.
You don't think it's an article?
I mean, I guess it is.
I'd call it an article.
Okay, from Dr. Peter Kreeft. He's a stud.
Kreeft. It looks like, it should be Kreeft, but.
It's Kreeft.
Whatever.
He's a philosophy stud. He's a professor at Boston College. At least he was. I don't know if he still is or not. But
yeah, I don't know.
He's authored a lot of books.
A lot of stuff. A lot of great books.
Yes. Has a good Thomistic understanding to most things.
Yeah. But also speaks in a way that you can understand.
Right. Yeah. A lot of his books are very digestible. He does the Summa of the Summa. Mm-hmm. And the shorter Summa of the Summa, you know, so just to break down.
Getting close to where I'm at
there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so he wrote this article, and we'll link it to the show notes, but it's about is there sex in heaven? And when I clicked on the article, I was like, wow, I didn't really read it. I just kind of like everybody does, you know, you kind of see how long the article is. Like, yeah. How much time am I going to invest reading this? And it was long. I was like, wow, that is a lot of, quote unquote, spilled ink over a topic that's very easy to say, no, let's move on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I was thinking like, man, that is long. I wonder what he has to say. He's a great thinker and
yeah.
I'm interested in what he has to say. So anyway, I sent it over to you and I emailed you and I said, hey, what do you think about this? Would this be a cool topic? And you were game as well. So I wanted to just kind of like... Just run through some of the things that he had to say, but then kind of give some thought, get your thoughts on it and see what you have to say about it as well.
Sure.
So is there sex in heaven?
Yes.
Okay.
Depending on what you mean.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why this is such a loaded question. I don't know, maybe loaded question is not the right way to say it, but the problem is that we have all come to adopt a misunderstood definition for sex.
Right. Yeah, there's a linguistic change.
Right.
To the trivial word of sex.
Mm-hmm.
That is changed, you know, from like intercourse to just who we are as a person.
Right.
So he lays out four principles and we'll list these four principles and then we can kind of jump into it on the other side of this break, but the four principles that he has are number one is sex is something you are, not something that you do. Number two is this is the principle is the alternate to chauvinism and not egalitarianism.
Okay.
Number three is sex is spirit. I just said number. Okay, good. I didn't.
You could be German. The Germans okay. they would do it this that way. Yeah.
Good. Sex is spiritual.
Okay.
And number four, sex is cosmic.
Okay.
And so those are the four principles that he says this is not something that I came up with. This is not original.
Okay.
He's just pulling from a lot of he pulls from Aquinas a lot as well.
Yeah.
In this and C.S. Lewis and a lot of other great thinkers.
I was reading it on my phone and I encountered a couple of times in the article where he would quote somebody and I couldn't tell who he was quoting and I thought maybe it's just because I was on my phone it wouldn't I don't know but. I could tell he was quoting heavy people.
Right. So he puts this all together to kind of answer this question is there sex in heaven?
Yeah.
And so when we get back on this other side of the break, we'll jump into the first principle, which is sex is something you are, not something you do. We'll be right back.
So, Adam, you've never been to Rome. I keep telling you, you have to drop what you're doing and go.
Dude, it's on my bucket list.
It's on the bucket list. I know, man. Look, you've got St. Peter's Basilica. You've got Assisi, which is just a day trip away. I mean, the whole faith is just right there. Around every single corner in Rome is another church that will just blow your mind.
I know. So if you're like me, you want to go to Rome, but you don't know where to begin, check out our show notes. There's a banner that says Select International Tours. Click that banner. They know how to turn your bucket list into reality. They've been doing this for over 30 years, so they know what they're doing. Check it out. That's Select International Tours. Welcome back to the Catholic Command Show. We're talking about, is there sex in heaven? And obviously the first thing you think of is no. Or at least that was my first thought. I was like, no. Okay, next question.
Yeah, I'm good at this game.
Yeah. Is there another true or false or something like that?
Right.
I can do that one as well. And as I was reading it, obviously there's more to the question. It's a loaded question.
Yeah.
So do you want, how about this? I'll let you start it off, kick it off.
Okay, so sex is something that you are. It's not something that you do. You know, like everybody's filled out forms. You know, you got a new doctor, and so you're filling it out, and it says sex, male or female.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what, when he says yes, there's sex in heaven, it's because in heaven, you're a man now. You will still be a man in heaven. As persons, human persons are a body-soul composite. So we are not a neutral spirit. Like, he uses the example of, like, driving a machine, a male machine, and other spirits drive female machines. No. You are a man. Your soul is a man's soul. Your wife has a woman's soul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so the body is actually just an outward animation of your anima, your soul. So that it is the soul that animates the body, and the body is expresses the soul. So they go together.
Right.
And so, yes, there will be sex in heaven because there will be men and women in heaven. And so that's kind of the
launching point.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it's important to remember, like, okay, obviously if there are men and women, if there are two different sexes, they're complementary to each other, you know, and they're masculine and they're feminine. And when it's really funny. He says in here, he says, traditional expectations that men be men and women be women are confused because we no longer know what to expect men and women to be. Yet, even though confused, the expectations remain.
Right.
And that, I mean, I'm quoting from that article.
Yeah, there's just something inside of us that yearns for something more, you know, than what the mainstream media tells us to be. It's not in the news now, but you know, there was all that toxic masculinity junk all over the place, and
right
really what they were talking about was just wimpy masculinity. It wasn't
not masculinity.
It certainly wasn't masculinity. Right
And because so the thing is obviously the more a man become like lives out his masculinity, he realizes that it's not for him, but for other people. It's a self-service, self-servant, self-denying.
And that goes along principle with his authority. The authority of the man in the home is the same. It's not for him, but it's for the benefit of other people.
Right. And the more he embraces that and comes to grips of that reality, the more he's even able to not only embrace his masculinity, but also help the feminine, his wife.
Right.
You know, because the beautiful thing that God did was he created both male and female and made us like a unit, made us compatible with one another.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the more a man embraces who he is, the more he is able to help even the woman in what she needs, and vice versa. The more she embraces who she is, the more she's able to help the man.
Right.
And so because if you start out confusing those two things, the whole the domino that falls from that and the repercussions of that is kind of where we are a lot today.
He uses a good example in here about how we are, men and women seem to always yearn for the prior year, like yesteryear's stereotypes where, you know, you have romance and chivalry and, you know, all of these things. And he talks about how the reason for that is because those stereotypes were closer to the truth. It's not that they were perfect, and he talks about ways in which they were flawed, but they were closer to the truth than the stereotypes
of today.
Right, exactly. What is the real calling of man and woman?
Right.
You know, we still want Romeo and Juliet to love each other.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of the he uses that example in the article, and I think it really tells the story well. It's a good example.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the further if we start messing up the harmony between man and woman, then there's problems that affect, you know, that come to fruition, which is kind of leading into the next topic or his next point, which is the difference between chauvinism and egalitarianism.
Right.
And we were talking about this off air, Davis, that a lot of times, you know, the chauvinism, which is definitions are key. So we'll start there. Chauvinism is when you think one sex is superior to the other, which follows that the sexes,
which really means that you think men are superior to women.
Right. Which follows, yeah, that they're intrinsically different by nature. And so if men and women are different by nature, then they must be different in value.
Right. And even the word superior is a little bit, it's not as good, because men are superior to women in some ways. We are superior to them in strength. We are mostly superior to them in height. You know, like, but so there are some ways we are superior, but we are not of greater value.
Right.
You know,
we're women, talking about intrinsic value.
Yeah, women are superior to men in other ways. So, but the real question is, are men more valuable? Are they better than women? And that is no.
That's absolutely
right.
False.
Exactly.
Right. And but because of that buy-in to a lot of men years and years ago, I think that was the seed that was planted that of what the feminism movement is today.
Right.
It launched the feminism movement, which is like the egalitarianism part,
right,
where everybody is equal, everybody is the same, no one is different.
Well, not
they're irreplaceable. They're
not
very
just
replaceable.
That they're equal. Not just that they're equal. Egalitarianism would go beyond saying that men and women are equal, but that they have sameness. You know, that there's no difference between men and women.
Yeah, they're complete substitute.
Yeah, other than you just have a different body, but that's the only difference. You know that. Men don't have different proclivities to certain things.
Right.
You know, that we are exactly the same on the inside.
Which is why I personally, you know, am against like that type of feminism, because you're taking all the bad things that men did, mm-hmm, and you're embracing those. You know,
right,
the self-serving, the absence, the, you know, doing things for your own self. You know,
right.
That is what the feminism movement is becoming today,
right?
And that is the bad things that men did years ago.
Yeah.
And that's not what we want, you know. And so if you understand that chauvinism is obviously a bad thing, but egalitarianism is equally bad. I mean, this is not something that we want to promote.
The ironic thing about chauvinism or about feminism is that it ends up enslaving women in the very things that they sought to be free from.
Right.
You know, they were like, oh, we're, you know, sexual oppressiveness or, you know, whatever it may be, freedom. They wanted freedom to do what they want. So now they're trapped in jobs and they say, well, we can sleep around too, just like men can. And so it's like, you're in the same spot, except it's worse. You don't have a husband who loves you, you know, like at least before, you know,
you had something. But this goes back to the reason why this is all happening is because men weren't being men. Men weren't being virtuous.
Absolutely.
Men.
Right. Yeah. It's not an either or. That's the thing.
Right.
And so it's not chauvinism. It's not egalitarianism.
Right.
It's authentic masculinity
and authentic femininity.
You know,
right.
If you are a woman, embrace your femininity.
Right.
You know what really bugs me a lot is that women seem to reject acceptance of their beauty as one of the gifts that they possess from God. Because I think that they have been told that, oh, if you are viewed as beautiful, then you're demeaning. It's like, oh, yeah, all you are is a pretty face. You know, that kind of downplays your other, you know, your intellect or, you know, maybe some of the other gifts that you might have.
Hmm.
But I really, really hate that because women are beautiful. Like the female form possesses a beauty that the male form simply does not. Like, men are not beautiful.
Yeah, we've talked about this before.
I mean, they're just not. But the female form, and it's so interesting because really men and women are so similar. We both have faces. We, you know, like our bodies are almost exactly the same, but there's just this hint of a difference between them that is, I mean, it's just astronomical in its outcomes. You know, just that it's so, women are beautiful. They should embrace their beauty.
Right.
It saddens me to see women reject their beauty in an attempt to be like respected, I think is what it is. Do you know what I'm talking? I mean,
no, I understand what you're talking about. Yeah. But I think that, you know, we got to understand that obviously by nature we are different, but in value we're sons and daughters of God. And so we're right. intrinsically valuable. This is why the pro-life movement is where it is today. You know, we're trying to be, making sure that we're protecting life, mm-hmm. you know, because it's intrinsically valued. It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter if it's male or female. It's mm-hmm. intrinsically valued because it's made in the image and likeness of God.
Right.
And if that's the case, if our differences are natural, when we get into heaven, it will be even more of a big. It'll be even a bigger difference because grace perfects nature.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So there's going to be even a bigger difference. In that aspect, you know, the higher you go up in this hierarchy, the more the differences are showcased or magnified.
Yeah.
Because God is the creator of all. So angels and us are different, just like we are different than animals.
Right.
And that that reality is exemplified even, you know, the higher you get up in the hierarchy of God.
Yeah. So there's a dualistic
not
view
of God, but of
nature,
of nature,
creation, yeah. So the dualistic view of the human person would say, you know, once again, that there's the soul, which is apart from the body. And that would kind of make the body an artificial add-on to the soul, that the human person is just a soul. And so if that was the case, then yeah, the body would have no place in heaven. But as Catholics, we know that the body is natural. It is part of our nature.
Right.
And so it'll be amplified. In heaven, we'll be, our masculinity will be even more, it'll be more than it is here.
Right, exactly. And if sexuality is a gift from God, then our sexuality will also be heightened when we get into heaven, not diminished.
Mm, interesting.
Which is, you know, which will lead us to our next point when we get back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan and Jim Spencer. Guarding the door. Don't even try to come in here. So before we get back to the topic, I just want to tell you what I was doing today because it was really nice.
Okay.
Tomorrow is the feast of St. Hyacinth. He's a Polish Dominican saint from like the 1100s. He was buds with St. Dominic. And he had like some miracles that he did about feeding a whole bunch of people. He invented the pierogi.
Just delicious.
I'm Polish, and so our family got together today, and for hours, we cranked out probably 100 pierogies.
Nice. Can I have some of them?
I probably can. They were delicious.
I love pierogies.
But it was just really great, like sitting around. There's just something fun about getting together as a family and working on a project. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, there
you
is.
You know, and it's not like, oh, doing a puzzle. Puzzling is fun, doing a puzzle, but like here we're doing something that's we're going to eat, you know,
yeah.
And there's just like something very like satisfying at a deep down, like this is what we're mm-hmm. like, this is fulfilling me as a person.
Right.
Right. Doing this with my family. And so it was just a great idea. It's my mom's idea. We're a Polish family, but you know, and everybody likes pierogies. So, and pretty easy to make. I mean, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of, you have to make a lot of dough, but mm-hmm. you know, it's nothing is, you're not going to like mess it up really.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, that was fun. I just wanted to throw that out there. Friday we had, our, Maximilian Kolbe party.
That was fun.
It's been a big weekend, but Kolbe, the Ascension, the Assumption.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, St. Hyacinth is not well known, but,
it was for you guys.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there.
Cool. Okay, so we're talking about, is there sex in heaven? And right out at the other side of that break, we were talking about how in heaven, everything that we have now that is a gift from God by nature is going to only be heightened. It's only going to become better. It's not going to be diminished.
Right.
Because God can't take away what he's already given to us.
Think about how big my biceps will be in heaven. That is going to be incredible. Like, I think probably there's a lot of people who are really looking forward to that.
I don't know, dude. I don't think so. I don't even know what to say about that. Okay, but sex is spiritual, obviously, because if there is...
Right, because it involves the person.
Right, the person, right. So because we are body, souls, composites, sex is a spiritual thing as well.
Right, so it's not just your body having sex with, you know, when a man and woman, when a husband and wife make love, it's not just their bodies that are involved. It's their persons. It's the union of persons.
Right. And you know this. He even says this, that you know, sex happens between the ears before it happens between the legs.
Yeah.
That's what he says.
I thought that was a good point.
It's a good point, you know.
Sex happens between the ears before it happens between, or more importantly, you know, whether it happens before or not, but the most important part is really taking place, you know, in your intellect, in when you, that gift of self,
mm-hmm.
that's really the most important part. And so, I mean, that's why new life can spring from this, because it is the whole person with the whole person.
Right.
You know,
which is, you know, this is a strange concept, I think, to think about, like, you know, the soul is sexual, because a lot of people today, you know, we struggle with either materialism or, like what you talked about in the last break, was dualism. You know, that mm-hmm. the soul and the body are completely separate, and you can't.
There's so much of that in our culture,
right?
And it's like people don't even realize that that's what they're doing sometimes. You know, when they talk about, oh, people in heaven are going to become an angel, it's like mm-hmm. no, actually they won't. Angels don't have bodies, and you know, I'm not trying to be too strict on people when they say that, but. It's just not true.
Right. Yeah. So the conclusion is because sexuality is innate, it's natural, it's pervasive, like it encompasses the whole body, not the whole person, not just the body, but the soul as well.
Right.
And we know this also, he brings out this in this point that I thought was really good. He talks about how complex the soul is,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how we all understand this in the fact of either suffering or joy. You know, there's so much more immense suffering in the soul than there is a body, and there's so much more immense joy in the soul than there is the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why the agony in the garden with Jesus was a big deal. Like, he was agonizing, his soul was agonizing
mm-hmm.
over what was about to happen. And I think we all understand this. Like, I've had times where I was so mentally, emotionally, like anxiety ridden that, you know, You hear people like either banging their head against the door, or, you know, pulling out their hair, you know, being so fidgety that they, you know, hurt themselves or something like that.
Yeah.
It's because they're trying to take away this pain, this interior pain by physical pain. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have the physical pain than the interior pain.
Right.
And so because the soul is so complex that it encompasses more than just the body, it's the whole person, body and soul.
Right.
And so anyway, I thought that was really cool how he kind of brought that out and how complex the soul is.
Yeah. I mean, we'll find out when we get to heaven, you know, it's like one of those things. It's hard to really know, but I can only imagine what it's like to see a person, you know, like, cause right now we see the person's body, you know, you can gaze into someone's eyes and you can kind of see more than just their body. But like in heaven, we will gaze upon their person,
mm-hmm.
you know, we will see all of them. And I think that's there is sex clearly is a foreshadowing of a heavenly reality. There's something
sure.
about it that does uplift us. You know, the word ecstasy, which actually means to like come out of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there is something about it that's like drawing us to heaven. But I think part of it is just that heaven will be such an intimate thing because we will see and know each other. You know, like we kind of even the Bible uses that word to know, you know, whoever knew his spouse. And it means that, you know, now you know, they made love
mm-hmm.
and, so I think there's an analogy there between possibly what it might be like in heaven just to look and gaze upon one another and to have knowledge of one another, not in a sexual way, well, not in an intercourse way, but in a complete way.
Yeah, and like a see whole
and
person,
like, and just to be able to give, we'll be able to give ourselves completely to each other. You know, in this as we gaze upon the Trinity, which is itself a complete gift of self. You mm-hmm. know, this Trinitarian love. And so as we imitate that and draw closer to it in heaven, we will seek to do the same things with ourselves, you know, as we're in communion with the communion of persons and we're in communion with one another, you know. So it's just, there's a lot of deep, I can't wait to, we'll find out. You know? Yeah. But
as we work out our salvation,
definitely
in
a lot
in
of
fear
stuff.
And trembling.
Right. But there's just something about the act of new life that is just causes great pleasure. Mm-hmm. You know, and so one thing I've speculated, this is just my own speculation, is that Mary, when she conceived Jesus in her womb, probably experienced the greatest physical pleasure. I mean, actually physical pleasure mm-hmm. of any person in the world. That's just my own, that's my own theory.
Well, Aquinas says that, he said that sexual intercourse was much more pleasurable before the fall.
Sure. I mean,
that makes sense.
Of course it was. I mean,
right.
That is because that's part of our nature. Mm-hmm. And our nature was darkened, you know, because of the fall. Mm-hmm. So we lost touch with our true selves. And so Mary, not having a fallen nature, would have, in my estimation, and also just her total gift of self, you know. And who is she conceiving, you know, like...
Right.
Just the yes. Her
That's
yes,
a very interesting thing to think about.
You know, so I think that she... It was probably a true ecstasy. Mm-hmm. It was so pleasurable. She was, you know, almost died. You know, who knows? That's just a theory. I don't want to get too distracted on it.
No, but I mean, I think that's a good point because all earthly realities point towards the heavenly reality that we'll
right.
have. So,
right.
you know, God made this and in his creation is good. And everything is going to be only heightened when we get into heaven that was good to begin with, you know, compared to right here on earth.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, and that kind of brief, you know, kind of goes into the last point that he's talking about is that sex is cosmic. So not only does sex go up as far as, you know, obviously as we get higher up, the difference between angels are even more, aware, you're more aware of the differences between you and angels and the differences between you and other people, the other saints and all the communion of saints, but it right. also goes down, right?
Yeah, well, and the point he makes here is in most languages, nouns and verbs have gender. And that's actually what gender is. Gender has never applied to the human person. It's only recently that sociologists have tried to apply gender, you know, like, oh, there's this gender spectrum and nonsense. Gender has always referred to the tense of verbs and nouns, how to conjugate properly words in other languages. Mm-hmm. That's what gender is. But it does, you know, we still call them masculine and feminine nouns. You know, it's like, oh, the ocean is feminine, you know. And if you notice, there tends to be a theme. The ocean is very like receptive, you know, like
right.
thing. So it's obvious. It makes sense why it's feminine.
Sure.
An interesting one is in Latin, male, farmer is a female noun. A farmer is female. Huh. It just kind of, that is like an anomaly almost. But all of creation, humanity has known this from the beginning. This is his point. I mean, like, these languages go back thousands of years. Yes. Would you say thousands? I would.
Yes.
Yeah. Hundreds of
yes.
thousands. Yes. So from the very beginning, humanity has understood that all of creation is made this way. And we participate, our maleness and femaleness, we participate in the ordinary form of creation. Mm-hmm. So that it is obviously so important that God put maleness and femaleness in all of his creation.
Yeah, and he even brings up, Dr. Peter Kripp even talks about this. We're catching the end of this for our show, but subscribe to our podcast because we're going to be talking more about this.
Yeah, and our YouTube channel.
And we'll continue this conversation. You can go to thecatholicmanshow.com for more information, but hang in there with us. If you're on Facebook or podcast, we'll be right back. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
And you can change the camera angle if you want to.
Boom.
Boom. Yeah, okay, so he even brought up the point, Dr. Peter Kreeft did. Kreeft? Did you say Kreeft?
Kreeft.
Kreeft?
Yeah.
I've said Kreeft like my whole life.
Oh, yeah, but I know. It should be Kreeft. Kreeft. It's K-R-E-E-F-T. That should be Kreeft.
But it's Kreeft.
It's Kreeft. Like
Kreeft.
Like Kreeft. 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 Like
Kreeft.
Take away an E. Kreeft.
Kreeft. Okay. Just man, I'd love to have him on the show like someday.
There's a silent E.
That'd be awesome to have
one
him.
One of the E's is silent.
Okay. That'd be awesome to have him on the show one day.
Yes. I would love to do that. Somebody knows him. Send him
would
to
love,
us.
Would love to have it. So he even brings this up, how the male and femaleness in nature is all the way brought down into the electron proton.
Yeah, I thought that was a great example.
Yes, because the electron
that the two pursue each other.
Yeah, the electron pursues the proton.
Right.
And knows that his rival is another electron.
Yeah.
You know, and so they were there's this art of pursuing one another, and he uses the example of like, well, that's, you know, that is a type of love. It's an attraction towards one another that they're, yeah, that they're
the opposite, right?
Yeah, that they're
because the electron and the proton are two like made for each other physically. They have a, you know, and just as man and woman are physically made for each other, you know, when mm-hmm. when Adam first laid eyes on Eve, at last bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, you know, he can see that her body is made for his body.
Right.
You know, and the without the woman, a man's body all by itself makes no sense.
Right.
It's it's a nonsensical arrangement. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's only when you encounter the female that you understand who you are.
Right, because man, you know, as the Bible says, man is not made to be alone.
Right. It's not good for man to be alone.
Right.
And the same is true with the electron and the proton. And, you know, so the electron wants to gravitate and orbit the proton. Interestingly enough, sidebar, many people think electricity flows from positive to negative. It does not. It flows negative to positive. Yeah. The electrons are the ones that were moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
makes sense.
It was actually after that they made all of the formulas for electricity that they realized we're wrong. Actually, it's the electrons moving, not the protons. But it just basically that just made all the answers negative. And so they said, it still works.
It still works.
Just ignore the negative answers that we're going to get, and it's fine.
It's the same thing.
Just make them positive or keep them negative. Doesn't matter.
Well, it's so
that was a sidebar.
Good sidebar.
Yeah.
So, but because we're made for communion, you know, the Trinity is a communion. Like you said, the Trinity is communion. We're going to be a communion of saints in the, you know, the mystical body of Christ. We're made for one another, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're made to be together, and because God made us to where male and female are complementary towards one another,
mm-hmm.
we realize that we become the most that God created us whenever we are self-denying, self-sacrificial, like we had talked about. And
yeah.
the highest form of pleasure is always comes with self-forgetfulness, when we stop forgetting about ourselves.
When we start forgetting about ourselves.
Start forgetting. Did I say stop?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Start forgetting about
it. And forgetting's not the right word, but yeah, when you put yourself
out of the
behind
equation.
Others, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so and that's what we're going to do, you know, when we've killed the egotistical pride within ourselves, when Christ in his mercy and justice has killed the pride that is within ourselves, and
yeah.
we're not sitting here thinking about ourselves, and it'll be a complete giving of one of ourselves to the communion to the body of Christ, the mystical body of Christ.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a crazy thing to think about.
So I was thinking about this today. This is also a little bit off topic, but it's about humility.
Okay.
I was realizing, I was praying this morning, and it occurred to me that humility is so important because as you grow in the spiritual life, you know, you seek to empty yourself
mm-hmm.
so that you can be more, you know, people will see you less and more of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
The more you do that, the more you will be praised by others. Rightly so, because A, it is right to praise Christ everywhere that he is found.
Mm-hmm.
But you will just be the kind of person that people are gravitated, you'll just be an attractive person. And so you're going to receive more praise. There will be a limit when your praise, the amount of praise you receive, will stop you in your progress. It is only by further humility that you can even grow in virtue anymore, because the Christ that people are authentically seeing in you causes praise, is the, you know, causes them to praise you, which ultimately
blocks you
from growth. So that's why I was realizing humility is always so important. It never is. It never stops being important, because you have to continue to empty yourself so that you can continue to grow.
Right. Because the more people see Christ in you, the more that they're going to tell you they see Christ in you. That's attractive, because holiness is attractive.
And that's not unjust of them to do so, because if they are finding Christ in you, Christ should be praised where he is found.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. So not that they're worshiping you. I mean, that's not what I'm saying. But anyway, I was just thinking about that in prayer today. And
that's interesting.
I just thought I'd share it with you. And the 20 people who are, 17 people who are still listening.
Nice. But C.S. Lewis has this interesting story that he talks about when somebody asked him, you know, is there sexual intercourse in heaven? And he gives this tale that, you know, that there's a father and mother, and it's come to the point of the birds and the bees talk with their son.
Yeah.
And so the parents are sitting there telling the son, here's how a baby is made. Here's what love is. Here's what, you know, sex is.
Yeah.
Sexual intercourse is. And the kid stops, and he's sitting there thinking about it for a minute and listening and kind of nodding his head, and then says, like, well, can I eat candy while I'm having sex? And the idea is because the kid thinks that, you know, if sex is so pleasurable, that, like my parents are saying, it's such a pleasurable thing. Well, the most pleasurable thing that I can think of is eating candy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 12 years old or whatever. I don't know how, whatever the age is. And, you know, so candy is the most pleasurable thing that I can think of.
Well, yeah, let's pair it up with candy. So candy is the best thing.
Can I, you know, double dip here, you know, and have candy and have sex at the same time?
Right.
And, you know, so he makes his analogy saying, like, asking is if we can have sexual intercourse in heaven is equivalent to almost asking the kid asking the parents, can I eat candy while having sex?
Yeah.
It's like, you don't understand. I know that you think that candy is the most pleasurable thing that you can think of. Mm-hmm. I get that. I've been there.
Right.
You know, I've filled my mouth with as many Pop Rocks as I can possibly put in my mouth.
Yeah.
I get that that is pleasurable. Like, I understand.
Yeah, it is awesome.
It's awesome.
It pops all over the place. It's crazy.
Like, yeah, it's crazy. But sex is so much better.
Right. And so we were talking about this beforehand, and I was telling you about Christopher West uses a very similar analogy. I think it serves a little bit better than the one that C.S. Lewis uses. He talks about how when you're a kid, chewing bubble gum is like the best thing that you know of. You know, it's your favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, learning about this.
Did you ever get the big chew gum?
Oh,
big
yeah.
Big league gum?
Or like the one that was like gum powder that you could pour in your mouth and it like all would clump together. It was really gross, but like it looked like it was that, a chewing was tobacco gum, pouch, you know?
It was like gum by the foot. What was that?
Fruit by the foot.
No, that was fruit snack. You know where
it was a pink and you could
pull it out.
Yeah. And just keep
chewing that gum.
Gum has totally changed in our lifetime. Like
Bazooka bubble gum was awesome too. For like 3 seconds, Bazooka bubble gum was awesome.
Like the zebra striped gum or something. Yeah. I forget what it was, but gum used to, like, the flavor lasted 20 seconds.
Right.
And today, I don't know what they did. I don't know how they figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like most stuff that's changed in our lives. Like, I wonder how they did that. But man, gum's way. Kids these days don't know how good they got it when they chew gum. But anyway, Christopher West was talking about kids chewing gum, you know, and he said, asking, are we going to have sex in heaven? Is sort of like a couple who just on their wedding night, instead of consummating their marriage, sitting around chewing gum. You know, he said sex in heaven, like obviously people will have bodies in heaven. So I suppose in theory, it would be physically possible to have sex in heaven. I mean, but the thing is, that's a ridiculous question, because you're sitting there gazing at the beatific vision. So asking, like, are we going to have sex in heaven is sort of like imagining a couple sitting around chewing gum on their wedding night instead of concert. I mean, it's like, no, nobody is doing that. Nobody has ever done that. Nobody will ever. It's just not, it's not a realistic thing to even wonder, because the thing, you know, you're in heaven.
Mm. Yeah, right.
Gum, like...
Well, and like,
you know, you're worried about chewing gum,
right? And
it's your wedding night,
right?
You're not chewing gum, no. You know,
right? And if you are,
nobody is though. Yeah, like, nobody,
right? Yeah, but earthly love is so passionate because heaven is full of passion. It's full of charity.
Yeah,
you know, like, this is the earthly, you know, the earthly shadow is the heavenly reality. And so, being in communion, there'll be way better ways of expressing love towards one another than this weird, awkward jigsaw puzzle of a person, you know, with another person in communion with one another.
Yeah,
and so. That's what I think Dr. Peter Kreeft.
Kreeft. Maybe it is Kreeft.
You're changing the name.
It is not Kreeft.
Okay.
I know that. And maybe it's Kreeft.
Okay.
You know what? Kind of play the middle ground between and A, like Kreeft.
You know, Kreeft. Dr. Peter.
Right. Pete.
Yeah.
Dr. Pete. We'll call him Dr. Pete.
That'll probably not get him on our show by
PD.
Yeah. But, you know, so that, I mean, that's what he's trying to bring to the end of his, this whole article was talking about, like, the ridiculousness of understanding of, like, the idea of how, almost elementary that question is.
Right. Yeah.
And it's only because this is a gift that God has given us that is so pleasurable, you know, that is a natural good. That'll be only exemplified in a higher degree.
Have you ever noticed how almost every single, even political debate ultimately comes back to sex? Okay, so...
I have not noticed this.
Yes. Almost always, every single thing that it's like, oh, I disagree with what you say, or I disagree with this stance... If you work it backwards, it almost always gets back to some sexual question or like a sexual deviation.
Hmm.
It's people justifying this, and it's incredible. If you sit there and work, I mean, you can do it with socialism. You can do it with most, not all, but a lot of leftist political policies. I mean, it ultimately comes back to what they would consider liberation or justification of sexual deviations. And it, once you realize that and you think about it more, it starts to make sense that here our sexual powers are probably the most potent. You know, that is the gift that we have, you know, like, okay, we have authority, we borrow authority from God. That's like part of him that we have,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, if you want to put it that way. The ability to author life is without a doubt the most godlike thing that we can do.
Well, yeah, I mean, and obviously the best thing that Christ could give us, you know, the biggest gift is always the most the one that is most perversed, right? The greatest glory is always the one that is tried to be diminished.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that sex is one of the biggest sins around since probably the fall of man.
Yeah, and that's a whole different debate, because Dante would disagree with
Dante
you.
Dante would, yeah.
But really, what I'm trying to say is, like, this is why it's so important to get sex right and to understand this part of your personhood, because if you're not willing to wield this potency that you have rightly, then you will be led astray.
Because even in your
intellect, like, every, you will get who you are wrong. If you're not willing to be open to life, if you're not willing to be fruitful, if you're not willing to self-sacrifice,
like, right. That's the whole thing, is like the understanding of like, oh, what is it? What's in it for me? You know, that's the whole thing, is right. Is in today's world with pornography, with masturbation, with what, you know, all these things, is like, it's self-gratifying. It's like, right. It's all about me. It's like, what am I going to get out of this?
Yeah.
And that's not what, that's the exact opposite of what heaven is, you know, it's a giving of oneself. And that's what marriage is, you know, it's a giving of oneself to the other. It's a self-sacrificial love. It's a, you know, it's Christ dying for his church, you know, it's dying for his bride, the church,
right.
You know, and that's what, you know, we're obviously called to do is die for our wives, mm-hmm. as Christ died for his church, you know? And so it's this self-sacrificial love. And what happens is obviously pride is the biggest sin. And so it becomes, what is it? What's in it for me, right. And not what can I give to them?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I like to think of it that your sexual powers, your sexual drive, your sexuality, your maleness, and, but also your intimate, you know, the intimate part of you is like a jet engine that's supposed to propel your person, you know, mm-hmm. in the right direction. And when you get it wrong, it like is like pointing those engines the wrong way, and the rocket ship of your person just gets imploded straight into the ground, you know. And right. It just has a way of destroying the image that you're supposed to be, you sure. know, because we're created in God's image, but we're supposed to image him the right way, mm-hmm. you know. And when we choose to sin, when we choose to live a life that is not in accordance with the natural law, with the divine law, then we fail to fully encompass the image that God created us to be. Mm-hmm. You know, we cease to be the image that he created us in.
Right.
And so getting your sexual powers, getting your sexuality wrong is like, it just immediately happens because you're created to be a man. Mm-hmm. And a man is a certain thing. I mean, it's masculinity is a certain way of living, so to speak, or
specific.
It's more than that. That's a bad way to say it. I don't want to say it that way, but you know, you are a man, right. Be a man. And if you're not being a man, then your whole life is going in a wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. Which is like, I mean, and that's what, you know, at the beginning of the show, we talked about, and I love, like, I just love what he says about this. You know, the traditional expectations that men be men and women right. be women are confused because we no longer know what to expect as, you know, men being men and women being women.
Right.
Yet, we still hold them to that. We still yeah. know, we still expect them to do that.
Christopher West says that the most important question a man can ask himself is, what does it mean to be a man? And, you know, and I think he's right, because obviously then follows, you know, some of the answers to that question is, well, a man is someone made in the image of God, you know, who follows, you know, Christ, you know. So it's like, mm-hmm. someone might say, no, the most important question is, how do I follow God's will, or, you know, whatever those things. But those are actually answers to the first question,
of what does it mean to be a man?
If I'm a man, what does it mean? Because it's the most fundamental thing. From the day you're born, we already know certain things about you. We know, actually, if you just think about it, how much of God's will can be determined for you on the day of your birth. The fact that you're a man, we already know a lot of things that are not part of God's will for your you're not called to be a mother. You're not called to be a wife. You're not called to be a sister. You know, like, there's mm-hmm. so much of,
yeah,
you mean, like, we can already now know so much of God's plan for you simply because you were born a man or a woman,
right?
You know, so, like, that is the fundamental question. It's the very first, this is the very first thing of who we are as people, as persons.
Which is why, you know, the devil has done such a good job of attacking that.
Yeah, and it's why we're so concerned about whether or not there's sex in heaven, because it's at the very foundations of who we are. This right. is like our deepest identity. I am a man. What does that mean? You know, and you know, like, there's so much identity crisis right now in the world.
Right.
And it's terrible. It's heartbreaking, you know, to see people who really, I don't think they're ingenuine. I mean, I think they really are. You know, when they say, like, oh, I'm non-binary, or, you know, like, whatever, I don't know what all the right words are, you know, that they use. But it's that makes my heart break. just because I think that they are genuine in the vast majority of cases. I mean, I take them at their word that they really feel that way about themselves. And like, what a tragic, can you imagine? Like, what if you just didn't know that you were, you know, like, what if you were confused about the fact that you were a man? Like, I've never wondered about that. I'm a man. I mean, look at me. I'm a boy.
Right.
Right. You know?
Right.
So like, it's so foundational into our understanding of who we are. Like even your relationship with your mother. Am I a son or am I a daughter? Mm-hmm. You know, and just think about the differences that makes. I mean, it really is. The implications go on and on and on. I'll just stop there because otherwise I'll keep going on.
No, I mean, I think you're right. And that's why I thought this was such an interesting topic, because I thought, one, it makes you think, right? It makes you, you know, at the very beginning of the show, I said, why are you spilling so much ink over such a simple question? And then as you keep going and you dive into the question and you understand, like, yes, sex is a person, is there sex in heaven? Yes. Is there sexual intercourse in heaven? No. I mean, because even the question of is there sexual intercourse in
heaven? It's a ridiculous question.
It's a ridiculous question.
Right. Because you fail to understand, as I'm sure we all do not appreciate, the beatific vision. I mean, there's no way we do. We just can't even.
You're close.
I mean,
you're pretty close. In all humility.
Not there.
Right.
Just not quite.
Right.
Yeah. But one thing he said in here, which I thought was really good, was like, oh, well, don't we think about, especially as men, don't we think about sex all the time? And he said, no. Actually, you know,
we don't think about sex at all.
Fantasize about it.
I wanted to start it off.
You dream about it, you know.
You
plan for it, you know, whatever. But you don't actually stop to think about it, you know, to ponder it in its consequences, in its beauties, in its, like, strangeness. Because it's kind of strange, really, if you think about it. Like, it's so weird. It's like the weirdest human. There's nothing else in the world that is anything close to it, you know, like in your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I love that point that he made. I was like, no, actually, people really hardly think about it at all. Mm-hmm. Like, really think about it, you know?
They do a lot of things except think about it.
Right.
They do almost everything.
They pursue it a lot.
They pursue it. They dream about it. They fantasize about it. They act it.
Yeah.
But they don't actually think about it.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So
it was fun to think about for this episode.
Good. That was,
Didn't you think so?
Don't you
think so, Adam?
Well, and that's, you know, even last episode you talked about, like, your whole goal in life is to make people stop and think about things.
The everyday, like, thing. There's so many, like, God puts so much of his plan and his beauty and his love into just the day-to-day stuff. The stuff that's so right in front of you.
Right.
Like, at our judgment, we're just going to be like, oh, how did I not see that?
Right.
I literally did that every day. Mm-hmm. And God is like, I know, I love you. Like, yeah, I know.
Right.
I just love you so much.
Right.
I was there all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, they said that when I was down there. They said that. And I had no idea what they meant.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So I think that was good overall. What do you think, Jim?
People would like to know if you would link the article.
Yeah, yeah, I just saw that. We are definitely going to link the article.
Oh, yeah. We'll link the article. Yeah, there's no problem. I was talking about, like, what your thoughts though were, Jim.
Speechless.
Jim
is speechless.
That didn't make me feel good about it.
Although, still don't try to break
although after Holy Mass today, he was like, are we recording tonight? And I was like, yes. And his wife, Lady Kathy, was there. And
Catherine. Lady Catherine sounds
Lady
better.
Catherine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there. And I was like, yes, we are. We're recording tonight. And I think he either asked or I imposed. The topic is, do we have sex in heaven?
Is there sex in heaven? Do we have sex in... Still the same question, but...
Is there sex in heaven?
Yeah.
And Kathy kind of was like... You could tell she like had some questions, but she's like, well...
I'm leaving.
I, I'll, I'll wait for the episode. And then she looked over at Jim and she goes, you're going to make him blush the whole time. Look at him. He's blushing. And he was. I looked over at him and he was like, he was as red as a tomato. Like he was like blushing, thinking about the episode. So I enjoyed that. And then I realized, oh, this is something I did not realize. I did not realize that I can make Jimbo Baggins over there blush.
Whatever, we do it like all the time.
I just didn't realize that his face turns red.
Yeah. It's not the scotch.
It's not the scotch. It's us. So I was like, yes, this is something that I'm going to put in my back pocket. What did you say?
Justifiable anger.
Yeah, justifiable anger. Yeah. So anyway.
Okay.
The camp out is filled up, I believe. I believe it's full. So
you got to get up pretty early in the morning if you want to come on the camp out.
Anyway.
But anyway, yep. Good job. I'm going to end the video.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel to the rosary to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content. But you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.